Grab a hold of big breakfast flavor at Hardee's. Try two breakfast sliders for just $2.99. Get Applewood smoked bacon or freshly grilled sausage with fluffy eggs and golden melty cheese all on a toasty little bun. Good morning, start at Hardee's. Available now for a limited time at participating restaurants. Tax not included.
On this edition, it's a delight to have social change artist Holly Neer make a return visit. I'm Richard Brendan, and the conversation and music begin now. As Holly Neer celebrates her first album in 3 years, Peace Becomes You, she's building on 40 creative years and 30 recordings. Respected around the world for her music and activism, her joy and passion inspire people to join her in celebration of the human spirit. Equally compelling at her shows or through your speakers, her music fully engages listeners in the world around them. Holly's made a career speaking to anyone in the world who believes in peace, justice, and feminism, a wonderful spectrum of humanity. In 1972, Holly was one of the first women to create an independent record company, paving the way for women like Annie DeFranco and others. Her goal was to promote and produce music by politically conscious artists from around the world, a mission that Redwood Records fulfilled for nearly 20 years. Often cited as one of the founders of the women's music movement, she not only led the way for outspoken women in the music world, but also worked for peace and multicultural consciousness. Throughout her long career, Holly has worked with a wide array of musicians, including Pete Seeger, Ronnie Gilbert, Arlo Guthrie, Mercedes Sosa, Bernice Johnson Reagan, Bonnie Raitt, Jackson Brown, Joan Baez, Phil Oakes, Harry Belafonte, and so many others. Holly Neer's been recognized many times for her work for social change, including honors from the ACLU, the National Lawyers Guild, the National Organization for Women, and the National Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences. She was named Ms. Magazine's Women of the Year and received the Legends of Women's Music Award. Another significant arena of Holly's activism is the LGBTQ community. Her interest was both personal and political. She was one of the first celebrities to discuss her sexual orientation during a pioneering 1976 interview with People magazine. She's also become a spokeswoman within the social change music movement. During her time on the road, luminaries in the folk world have noted how her presence sets the tone for each event she joins. As she has observed, music can influence choices for better or for worse. A lullaby can put a troubled child to sleep, but muzak can put a whole nation to sleep. A marching band can send our children off to war. It can also have everyone laughing and dancing and loving as it leads a gay pride parade. Holly finds herself in a role that her amazing journey has uniquely prepared her to fill as the significance of her work over time has crystallized her iconic status. And once flattered, amazed, and centered, she graciously assumes this honoring that comes with time, proud to represent, through her voice and her music, the movements that are so fundamental to her spirit. She joins us from Northern California. Holly Neer, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
It's such an honor to have you on this program, because when I think about artists using their craft for social change or activism, you are it. You've been at this for a long time, haven't you?
I have. It's interesting to be a young upstart, and the next thing you know, you're an elder in a community. And for a while there, I was an elder in training, and I think I just graduated into elder. You know, but it's an interesting process, which I take quite seriously, because I had teachers when I was growing up, and I totally respect the student-teacher relationship, and now a lot of those people have passed on, and I'm moving in to see if I can fill up some of those spaces that get left behind when our dearly beloveds go into the next world, whatever that is. So it's been an interesting challenge to think about how to do that, how to become an elder in a graceful and wise way.
Your career did start very early. I believe you sang in public for the first time at the age of 8.
Yes, I did. I sang for an event that was put on by the Veterans of Foreign Wars. And
interesting.
Isn't that?
Yeah.
I look back at that now, and of course I'm very good friends with people who are veterans for peace, And veterans have been a very important part of my education, especially when the war against Indochina was going on. I was really taught a lot by veterans who were actually protesting the war from within the military, protesting war and racism and sexism. And this was in 1971, and I was just, you know, a kid. And but so were they. You know, we were all 19, 20, 21 dealing with these huge issues, which, of course, young people are dealing with now. And it was an amazing university for me to be part of. When I was eight, it was kind of like a little ding going off to have this concert produced by the Veterans of Foreign Wars. And they put me on kind of late in the evening. I remember falling asleep backstage, and they had to wake me up. And I went out and sang a song from Oklahoma. I sang, "Oh, What a Beautiful Morning," a cappella. And I've been singing a cappella a lot ever since. I grew up on out in a rural area, so I sang without instrumentation from tops of mountains from the time I was very little. And although I work with musicians and love working with musicians, I also feel such a freedom to sing a cappella, because you never have to run and get your guitar, or, you know, you can just open your mouth and sing. And that's always been I've been grateful for that.
Yeah. A lot of people who know who you are through your music might not know that for a while you performed in film and television. You even had a run in the Broadway production of Hair back in the day.
I did. When I first left home and went to college, I went to UCLA, which turned out not to be a good match for me, because the campus was many times bigger than my hometown, so I was kind of lost in it. But while I was doing one of the shows there, I was seen by a film and television agent, and he got me a job in a film. And so I left school and began working. So from the time I was in my late teens, early 20s, I never finished school, and I just went on and worked.
Yeah.
And a lot of the jobs I got, again, people I worked with became my teachers. Other actors who were in the film and television world, who were in the projects I was in, sort of showing me how to do it and how to defend myself. And there's a huge tendency on the part sometimes of directors and producers to abuse artists, because they want to get as much out of them as they possibly can for the least amount of money.
Exactly.
And I understand that, you know, that's their job. But the actor's job is to learn how to protect oneself, when you have no choice, and when you actually do. And these actors I worked with in these early film and television shows, like The Partridge Family and All in the Family, Room 222, a wonderful film I was in called Slaughterhouse 5.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a great anti-war film, and working with George Roy Hill was amazing. So these people all taught me how to behave, you know, how to fine-tune a craft, and then how to be a professional. And I sometimes feel sad for artists who didn't have any training. They got into their work because they loved music, or they, you know, had a passion for it, but they never learned about how to be a professional. And I think it's such an important part. If there's any young people listening right now and you're kind of going, "Oh, I don't need to go get music lessons," or "I don't need to learn about this," yes, you do. You really do. It's so important to have craft, because one doesn't always feel like it. You know, you don't always feel like being good. So then you have to turn to craft and say, "Craft, help me through the night." And it will. It really will.
What made you decide to pursue music rather than acting as a career?
I think my voice was given to me at birth, and that was always my strong suit. It just so happened that my first paying jobs were in film and television, but I never got hired to do a job to sing until I went to New York, and then I got into Hair. But I think I was a better singer than an actor. Had I gone to acting school, like my older sister went to the London Academy and she studied as an actor, and she came back and, oh my gosh, she went from being a good actor to being a great actor. And I never did that. So I might have been able to fake it for a while, but my my best skill was as a singer.
Mm-hmm. And can you comment also on this long and beautiful tradition of music in social movements?
Well, it may very well be that that has something to do with your previous question about why I went to music, is that as a singer, and then I started working as a songwriter, mm-hmm. I was able to really participate in the telling of the story. And as an actor, until you get powerful within your field, you're a bit more of a puppet. Being asked by the puppet master to do their vision, because it is the right of the writer and the director and people who are making that film, it's their vision, and they ask the actors to come and bring that vision to fruition. So as a singer, songwriter, I had a little bit more participation in what the story was going to be. And that was always very attractive to me. I got a chance to work with people who were opposing the war in Indochina and people who were working the farm workers to get rights for the people who pick our food, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. working with people who were trying to bring attention to how inappropriate some of the prison system regulations were, that kind of prison industrial complex that mm-hmm. we're living with now. In the beginning, early days of feminism, I found all these ideas so interesting. I loved working with people who took a problem and said, we as human beings are better than this. Let's see if we can improve on this.
Yeah.
Or this is horrific. Let's see if we can turn this around. There was something about that investigation of humanity. I mean, we are animals, right?
Yes.
We like to we're not, but we are, and we come into this world with all kinds of behavior that's locked in, but we have these minds and we have creativity, and I just fell in love with the idea of critical thought, and songwriting was such a wonderful way to investigate critical thinking. And of course there had been a long tradition of that before I was born, and I found that path, and I found it very exhilarating. And of course, eventually I realized this is going way before we even knew what the folk tradition was. This goes all the way back to those actors who traveled around in troops during the time of the king, you know, and they would get hired to come and play for the king, and they had to walk that edge about whether they were going to make the king laugh or get their heads cut off, you know.
Now, that's a tough crowd. That's a tough critic, isn't it?
It's a tough critic.
Yeah.
And then, of course, indigenous arts, where the sound of the voice and the expression of the drum and the dancing of the feet is just part of the very beginning of life for people all over the world. And it unites us in that. So I found it such a rich, fat, exciting world to be a part of, that storytelling. But you can be a storyteller and work within a very shallow mm-hmm. Framework, or mm-hmm. you can be a storyteller and dig very, very deep. It's more frightening. It's mm-hmm. it's less secure.
Yeah.
But the benefits of digging deep can be wonderful if you're willing to fall on your face and be humiliated and to be wrong most of the time. You know, if you can get a grasp on that, and if someone comes up and accuses you of something, instead of going, "I'm not like that," you can say, "Huh, well, that's interesting. I'll think about that." And those really are two options we all have on a day-to-day basis, is whether we're going to put up our dukes and be defensive, or whether we're going to go, "Huh, all right, I'll take that into consideration."
Yeah.
And you can always reject it, but I just find critically thinking about things to be so much fun. <You know?
laughs> Hey, I want to say congratulations on your new album, Peace Becomes You. It's a beautiful mix, 2-CD set, beautiful mix of songs. I want to talk a little bit more about the album, but first I want to play a song off the album. And for the first one, we're going to go to the song Peace Becomes You. Can you share a little bit about that song before we go to it?
I can. I wrote that lyric. Was having a hard time coming up with music that I felt was appropriate. And so I turned to a friend of mine, John Fromer, wonderful singer-songwriter out in California. and asked him whether he would be willing to write the music. And it was a hard question to ask him because he was dying. And I didn't know whether he would love the chance or would not, but I thought, well, it's up to him. And he said yes, and his family told me he wrote right up to the last day of his life. And it was part of his love, his healing, to keep writing music. And he wrote the music to this, and it just fit hand in glove. I wanted to write a lyric that was a love song to people who are political thinkers and who do live their lives in accordance to their belief system. And so it's a love song to people who work so hard for peace and justice and compassion.
I'm Richard Brennan. We're inside the music today with the great Holly Neer. We're celebrating not only her long body of work in social justice, but also her newest album, Peace Becomes You. Here's the song, Peace Becomes You, off that album. We'll have much more of this conversation on the other side of the song.
I like the way you look in your baggy jeans. I like the way you walk with your sassy stride. I like the way you sound when you call out my name, the way you laugh when you've got something to hide. But most of all, I like how you trust in change, and honey, darling,
man.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Richard Brendan. It's a joy to have Holly Near on today, singer, activist, social change artist. We're talking about her newest album, Peace Becomes You, and it had been a while before you created a new album. Why now and why this album?
Oh, I wish I knew. It would make my life so much easier if I knew how my creativity worked. I took a break. I moved out of a home. I put everything in storage. Oh. I traveled around. I went and lived in Latin America for a while. I went camping with a friend in Florida in the Everglades. I drove cross country by myself camping. I just took a break from being me. And when I was on the other side of that, all of a sudden something inside me said, okay, it's time, you know, come back and start writing. And I wrote quite a few songs that are on the recording, but I also started feeling I wanted to sing, as I always have, actually, songs that are by other writers, because there's so many great poets. So I do a song by Farron, the wonderful Canadian singer-songwriter. I've oftentimes recorded Bernice Johnson Regan, who I think is an extraordinary songwriter and thinker. Yes. And then I did some stuff just for fun. There's a CeeLo Green song on there, and there's an Irving Berlin song. It's kind of all over the map. But I had a great time, and there was something, I don't know that this is true, but while I was recording it, I felt like this might be the last time I record. You know, I'm 65 years old, and everything from here on out as a vocalist is up for grabs. You know, I may be one of those vocalists, like, has a voice for till I'm 80 or 90, and I may not. And I don't really want to go out and keep singing when everything gets all shaky and gravelly and you can drive a truck through my vibrato.
But look at Tony Bennett. He's singing with Lady Gaga now. And how old is he?
I don't know. If you happen to have those jobs. And you keep enjoying it. But I think it's also important to know when it's time. And that hasn't happened yet. I'm still touring, still singing, and still quite amazed at the richness of my voice. I'm grateful to it every day.
Yeah.
But I'm aware that like athletes and like dancers, there's a time where you decide, okay, you can parade me out and I'll talk from time to time.
I'd like to share one of your quotes to you and have you comment on it. You said, I do not separate my music from my heart, nor do I separate my ideas from my daily life. I open myself up to learning as much as I can about humanity and this mysterious life experience, but I do not relate to political work as a series of causes. Moment by moment, I integrate what I learn into my personal life, personalizing my politics. It's from this personal place that I write my songs.
That's it. I don't relate very much to people who talk about, they'll say, well, what cause are you involved in now? I don't think it matters. It's how we live our lives. In fact, I was talking to a woman once who was working 24/7 in a shelter for abused, battered women, and she was bemoaning the fact that she was not able to become part of the anti-apartheid movement back when there was, you know, a huge movement in this country to end apartheid in South Africa. And I said to her, well, you know, if you just keep an eye on your own program and make sure there's no racism in the shelter, you're doing anti-apartheid work. You know, we can't all go all over the world and do everything, but we can bring the world to us.
Yeah.
And so in the way we talk to our children, in the way we talk to our sweetheart, in the way we live our daily lives and treat people in the grocery line, we can bring everything that needs to be learned close to home. And I knew friends, for example, after 9/11, when there was all the Arab bashing going on, and they immediately went out as a group, half of them Northern European and half of them Jewish, and they went and found the local community Arab restaurant, and they just hung out there all night to protect their neighborhood and their friends, because those kind of generic slashing of people and cultures is just unacceptable. You can't build community like that.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like they all got in a plane and went to New York. They looked around in their own town and said, how can we participate in moving our community forward in the most progressive and peace-loving way we can? And I had so much love and admiration for that. And I think that's what I'm trying to say. And as an artist, then if you do that, if you stay grounded in your own life and your own work, your own self-criticism, mm-hmm. then that work is going to come out in the writing.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to come out in the way you treat your audience, and it's going to come out in the way you write the songs. Or, and I am probably my biggest critic. I think about things a lot after I've done a show, if I said something spontaneously, because I don't set the show. I speak spontaneously a lot. But if something comes out of my mouth, I go, well, that wasn't really a very good way to say that. Let's see if we can find a better way to say that. And that's my homework. That's my work after every show, is to think through and make it better. Or a lyric where it's just needs to be improved. You know, I can do better than that. Or I just learned something so I can apply it. It's being alive. That's how a show doesn't become static or a song becomes static.
Mm-hmm.
And just because I wrote it one way in 1984 doesn't mean that it can't be revised in 2015, because hopefully I've learned something since then.
I want to go to another song off your new album, Peace Becomes You. Very, very powerful lyrics in this song, and it's called It Won't Take Long. And I'd like for you to maybe share just a little bit about this song before we go to it.
Well, this was written by Farron, the Canadian poet I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we did not live in a capitalist world that we live in, she would be one of the great poets of our country. I mean, she is one of the great poets, but she would be known as that.
Mm-hmm.
I love her songwriting. And sometimes when you see dominant culture make lists of who the great thought-provoking poets are, you'll just see Bob Dylan.
Yeah, right.
Where's Farron?
Uh-huh.
I mean, what is wrong with, we're filled with communication. How come people don't know about her? So I loved singing this song, and it's driving. It just starts and it doesn't stop. I think it's an 8-minute song, isn't it? I mean, it goes on and on and on, and it just keeps adding one thought. It layers itself about how we as community and as humanity can keep heading with a kind of vigilance and power and excitement and magic
mm-hmm.
towards a vision. I just think it's a spectacular piece of music.
Well, and you do well in recording it. We're inside the music today. I'm Richard Brendan with social change artist Holly Neer. We're celebrating her newest album coming out. It's a 2-set CD, Peace Becomes You. This song is taken off that album. It won't take long. We'll take a listen to this and be back to the conversation.
They say some men would be warriors, and some men would be kings, and some men would be owners of land and other man-made things. And false love as the eternal flame would move some to think in rings. And gold would be our power and other foolish things. But you who dream of liberty must not yourselves be fooled. Before you get to plea for freedom, you have agreed to be enruled. If the body stays a shackle, then the mind remains a chain that'll link you to a destiny whereby all good souls are slain. And it won't take long. It won't take too long. They say time is in the river, of the river. talking about, and I say, are you trying to say you don't belong? I am my mother's daughter, but I have seen myself in you. It's this blessing that I follow now, and so I must speak true. I dreamed of thousands dying. It was you and you and you. And while the city sleeps so quietly, there is something we must do, and it won't take long. It won't take too long at all. It won't take long. And you may say, I don't know if I want to know what you're getting at, and it makes me want to say, so long. Because grief shall come in measures, only grief alone will know. And you'll see it on your family, on your own face it will grow. And they'll try to keep you hungry, and then they'll tell you to eat snow. You know, pride can be a moving thing if we learn the strength of no, and it won't take long. It won't take too long at all. It won't take long. And you may say, I don't think this has anything to do with me, but did you ever think that you could be wrong? At noon on one day coming, human strength will fill the streets of every city on our planet. Hear the sound of angry feet. With business freezed up in the harbor, the kings will pull upon their hair, and the banks will shudder to a halt, and the artists will be there. 'Cause it won't take long. It won't take too long now. I don't think I can be a part of that, and it makes me want to say, don't you want to see yourself that strong? Divisions between the people will disappear that honored day, and though oceans lie between us, lifted candles light the way. Half will join their hands by moonlight, the rest under a rising sun. Sun and moon, a ritual wailing has begun, and it won't take long. It won't take too long at all. It won't take long. And you may say, I don't know how to be a part of what you're talking about, and it makes me want to say, come on. One gun, and though our homes be torn and ransacked, we will not be undone. For as we let ourselves be bought, we're gonna let ourselves be free. And if you think we stand alone, well, look again and you will see. We are children in the rafters, we are babies in the park, we are lovers at the movies. We are candles in the dark. We are changes in the weather. We are snowflakes in July. We are women grown together. We are men who easily cry. We are words not quickly spoken, with a deeper side of try. We are dreamers in the making. We are not afraid of. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Richard Brendan. We're inside the music today with singer, activist Holly Neer. We're talking about her newest album, Peace Becomes You. But also, Holly, when Carrie Newcomer was on last week, she did something different with her new album. She recorded it herself with her own label, and she took community funding to be able to do it. And I couldn't help but think about you, because you have been often known as one of the founders of the women's music movement. And in 1972, you're one of the first women to create an independent record company. That was very radical back then.
You know, it was, if I had known what I was doing, I probably wouldn't have done it. I would have been terrified. I was, it's the beauty of youthful innocence. So I really encourage older people when talking to young people who propose something that seems to us is absolutely impossible, don't tell them that. They'll go do it. And that's what I did. I started a record label. I came back from my trips to the Pacific and started writing these songs about the military-industrial complex, about peace and war and women. And the major labels that I was in conversation with said, some said, we like your voice, but you'll have to change the lyrics to your songs. And others said, there's not enough element of submission in your voice. You'll never be a pop singer. Kind of between those bookends, I went, wow, that's a lot of adjusting for me to do in order to get to make a record. And so I really did say, I'll come back to that, but I'm going to go record these songs that I've written, and then I'll just have that for me and my family and for some of my friends in the peace movement, and we'll press 500, and we'll call it a day. Mm-hmm. And that was the big beginning of it. And the next thing I knew, there was a much bigger audience for those songs and those ideas than what I had ever imagined. And I never went back to the majors.
Yeah. Over the years, you've also had the good fortune of working with a lot of amazing artists, people like Pete Seeger and Arlo Guthrie, Mercedes Sosa. You mentioned the great Bernice Johnson Reagan, Bonnie Raitt, Jackson Browne, Harry Belafonte. By the way, I watched the movie Selma, which I thought was so well done. And there was a scene in there when they're getting a phone call from Harry Belafonte, and he was flying in Joan Baez and some of these people to sing down in Selma at that time. What was it like to work with that beautiful soul?
Well, first I felt so envious that I missed out on that little tiny period of history. It was like 3 to 5 years, because I was still in high school.
Yeah.
And they were all older than me.
Yeah.
And the Hootenanny happened before I graduated. And the civil rights movement music that was taking place. And I just, and also being a Californian, a lot of this was happening in the South and Southeast. And so when I finally got to a place in my life and career where I began crossing paths with these people, these were my stars. You know, some people maybe wanted to go and meet Marlon Brando, but I wanted to meet Harry Belafonte. I wouldn't have minded meeting Marlon Brando, but I just grew up with this music. I can remember when Harry's records came in, when Odetta's records came into our household. My parents were very good at seeking out these recordings, because we were way out in the countryside, didn't have television, and they ordered them on catalog. And both Harry and I maybe it was Odetta's record that came in, and she sang this song called Water Boy. Mm-hmm. And it's Water Boy. And then she went, huh, where are you hiding? And I asked Mom, what was that? And she said, well, it's about a chain gang. I said, what is a chain gang? And she said, well, they're tied together at ankles and they have to go out and break rock in the hot sun, and they sing while they're breaking the rock so they don't tear each other's ankles up by walking in the wrong tempo. I was, as a child, absolutely horrified. And I remember saying, people do that to each other? Like, there are human beings who do that to other human beings? Mm-hmm. And it was a really important early question for a child's mind. And it came out of the music. It came out of a song. And it's part of why, as I got older, I realized how powerful music is, because if a song like that can raise that question in a child's mind, it's certainly done its job. And when I finally met Harry and I met Odetta, both Mr. Belafonte and Odetta were pleased in a kind of deep and profound way to know that their songs, sung and recorded 3,000 miles away, made their way into a little white farm girl's heart. Mm. You know, it reminded them of their power and their influence, and mm-hmm. they probably didn't need to be reminded of it because they know what their job was and how well they did it. But mm-hmm. Mr. Belafonte, the last time I saw him, he's still living in New York, but was at a memorial, a big concert we did for Pete and Toshi Seeger at Lincoln Center. And he was there, and I went up to him and said, the person who's doing the finale is not able to make it, and they've asked me if I'll lead the finale. What do you think I should sing? And I gave him a few options of things that we could do, and one of which was We Shall Overcome, which, of course, Pete sang during the Civil Rights Movement, and along with millions of other people. And I said, perhaps I should turn this job over to someone, you know, a person of color who was in that movement. And he said, I think that we have to take the next step beyond that. Mm-hmm. And you can lead this. You've done your homework, and you can lead this. And he encouraged me to sing it. So I found a couple other people of color who were there backstage and asked them if they would sing it with me. And we led the finale with that song. And Marcel Davies Lashley, the wonderful African-American singer, led the verses. Mm. And it was, and also Martha Redbone, who's a Native American mm-hmm. singer, came up front and sang it with me. Mm-hmm. It was very moving. And I felt grateful to his consultation and his advice, and I think he's a very smart, smart man.
Yeah, yeah, he truly is. I want to go to another song. It's actually not on this album, but it's one I often play. It was on an album of yours and maybe a few others, but this one was called Edge, but it's one of my favorite Holly songs, and it's called Planet Called Home. And to me, it's all about that we're all connected and we all need to be taking care of one another. But as we go to that, can you share a little bit of backstory of that song that you wrote several years ago, many years ago?
That song came to me in one sitting. I just sat down, all just came pouring out like as if I had a fairy godmother who was telling me a story. Mm. And I just kept writing and came to the very, I might have changed two words after I was done. So it's a magical, mystical story, and I loved being the conduit for, you know, it coming into the world. But I also, you know, this idea of us all being one is a very complex concept. And what I have learned over time is that there is a way for us to see ourselves all as one, at the same time, not take away from people's differences. Mm-hmm. So remember in the olden days when there were people who said, oh, I don't see color.
Yeah.
You know, white people who would say that, you want to go, are you kidding me? Can you see the sky is blue? Then you can see this person is black. What do you mean you can't see color? And they were trying to figure out their own racism. And I understand, you know, that's a process we all have to go through. But the fact is, we do see each other's differences. Someone comes wheeling up in a wheelchair. They're in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. And so to say we're all the same and all one can only be truthful if we realize that within the concept of that oneness, we have incredible differences. And there are people for whom society makes their lives harder for them than it makes for other people. And it's in that weighing out of our oneness and respect for the complexities of our differences that I think has been a really important journey for me. And I hope that some of that is not only in this song, but there's another song called Somebody's Jail that I felt got very informed by me learning more about that idea.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to go to this.
You know, we'll hear people. Oh, sorry.
No,
go ahead.
Yeah, we're going to go to this song, Planet Called Home. We're inside the music today with the great Holly Near. It's a joy to have her on today's program. Here's this song, and then we'll finish up our conversation at the other end.
Can you call on your imagination as if telling a myth to a child? Put in the fantastical, wonderful, magical, add the romantic, the brave and the wild. Once upon a time there was a power so great that no one could know. was a small part of time. Hundreds of souls found their way out of nowhere to be on Earth at the threat of decline. Now let's all go. They moved as one being, even though each would arrive here alone. They promised to work in grace with each other to brave the beautiful planet called home. There was no promise that they could save it, but how exciting to give it a try. If each one did just one thing beautifully, complex life on Earth might not die. And so they arrived in a spectrum of colors. The population on Earth did explode. Some threw themselves in front of disaster, and others slowly carried their load. Some adopted small girls from China. Some lived high.
Donna DeLore, and you're listening to Richard Brendon, Inside the Music on WICR.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Richard Brendon. We're Inside the Music today with social change artist Holly Neer. We've been talking about her new album that's out, Peace Becomes You, as well as playing a classic or two. I want to share one more quote back to you that you said at some point, but I thought it was really powerful for me. And you said, "Music can influence choices for better or worse. A lullaby can put a troubled child asleep, but Muzak, M-U-Z-A-K, can put a whole nation to sleep. A marching band can send our children off to war. It can also have everyone laughing and dancing and loving as it leads a gay pride parade." There is power in music if used right.
Well, and there, that last sentence is it, right? Because someone's right is different than my right. What we all think is the right way to behave is not the same, and there lies the crux of the matter.
Yeah.
There are people who are very offended that a marching band is used as a gay pride parade, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's how do we all live on this planet together? Who knows? I find right now it to be the most challenging ever in my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
I have never seen anything as complex as what we're seeing right now. And historically, there's precedence of pulling out of situations that seem untenable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people must have thought during the plague that it was all over.
Yeah.
And I think that our young people are going to rise to the occasion. The way young people gathered and educated themselves about organizing and protest after Ferguson was spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
There are people all over the world moving up and really taking on the responsibility of finding out what is their greatest humanity and how can they put it forth.
Yeah.
So I am reassured by that. But they have certainly been handed a more complex task than the one I was handed as a young person.
You clearly have not been afraid to step out of the boat, so to speak. I know one of the significant areas of activism for you is the LGBTQ community. And your interest, maybe a lot of people know this, maybe not, is both personal and political. You're one of the first celebrities to discuss your sexual orientation during an interview with People magazine back in 1976.
I know. What was I thinking?
Well, yeah. I mean, most people were afraid back then to even bridge that, but you did the interview.
Yeah. It was, it felt to me, first of all, it wasn't going to ruin my career because being as outspoken as I had been about the war had already taken care of that.
It was already ruined, so.
Yeah, right. So check. Uh-huh. Take that off the list. But it was just part of who I am. I feel like all my life, when I learn something, I want to share it.
Yeah.
And even if what I share, I turn around 10 years later and change it, I think I was saying that earlier, it's still, it's just my style to say, hey, this is interesting. And that was, I was so overwhelmed and fascinated by this rising up of women who were slowly coming out of the closet to themselves and then to each other. And they were gathering in living rooms and singing these new baby songs to each other about what it was like to be female and what was it like to be a female loving another female. And then those living rooms got too crowded, so they moved to the basements of Unitarian churches and started having concerts, you know. And then the next thing you know, they were playing at Carnegie Hall. So it was... when I traveled internationally, I just took a deep breath and I would say, I bring greetings. I would be at these big music festivals and conferences for peace. And I bring greetings from the peace movement and the labor movement and the United Farm Workers and from the gay and lesbian community. And I just said, as one, and the translator over next to me would just, you could just see their whole body stop. Yeah. They went, wait a minute, that's not, I don't know how to translate that. There were some languages that didn't really have a positive word for gay and lesbian. And so it was, it's hard to imagine that that was not so long ago, but I just decided that I was going to start to use that language. And beautiful Casey Kasem, he so often, he was a very progressive thinker, and he so often would be the MC at some of these big peace and justice gatherings, and he, right off the bat, I would say to him, you can introduce me any way you want, but I think it's important to say the words. And he'd go right out there and he'd say, you know, she's part of the lesbian community. I'd say, thank you. You know, that's, he just felt like he was himself an Arab man and he'd been working on trying to change the way in which people thought about that. And he just said, yeah, okay, let's change how we think about this too.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I felt very happy to be part of that time of things opening up and opening up. And then I lost some of my audience from the peace and justice movement. They thought I'd got off the deep end, and it took them a while to look at their own homophobia, and many came back after a while, but I could feel the departure happen.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, a dozen years later, I ended up in a relationship with a man, and I felt some of the lesbian community depart. They thought that there'd been so many examples of people who felt the pressure of being out, who said, you know, who were stars, who got outed or whatever, who said, oh, it was a phase, or, and they would quickly marry in order to protect themselves. And I think the lesbian community thought I was going to do that. And I never did. I continued to sing lesbian songs and to support the development of the gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgendered, queer community. It's a, to me, it's an inherent part of who I am, regardless of relationships. So now sometimes people will say, well, are you or aren't you? Are you this, you that? We all get to do this however we want. But for me, I'm part of that really big, fluid rainbow. And I like being part of it, but I've never been able to kind of patriotically land on a particular place.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I can kind of say I am is monogamous. So that'll be my identity, I guess, from here on out.
Yeah.
But I also understand when some people are profoundly one thing or another, and that's great. There's room for the whole shebang, you know? In this rainbow, nobody has to leave in order to make room for somebody else. We just move over a little bit.
That's right. Holly Neir, I want to thank you so much for your courage, your immense creativity, and also for sharing your time with us on today's program. It's indeed been an honor and a joy to have you here.
Well, thank you. It's been my pleasure. I love that you have this program that gives artists room to talk about their ideas and their songs.
And for more information, all people need to do is visit you online at hollynear.com. Holly, thank you.
You're welcome.
This WICR program is underwritten in part by Georgetown Natural Foods Market, located at 4375 Georgetown Road on Indy's west side. They carry organic produce and bulk body care products such as shampoo, lotion, soaps, and shower gel. Their kitchen serves soup, sandwiches, hot entrees, and carryout food. Plus, they have a juice bar. Georgetown Natural Foods Market, located at 4375 Georgetown Road on Indy's west side. Their website is georgetownmarket.com.
Richard Brendan, Inside the Music, is underwritten in part by Natural Awakenings magazine. Each month, Natural Awakenings takes a practical look at the latest natural approaches to nutrition, fitness, creative expression, personal growth, and sustainable living. The magazine also covers the products and services that support a healthy lifestyle. Natural Awakenings magazine can be found at most healthy lifestyle outlets. Their website is awakenindy.com.
Finding a spiritual home can be challenging. Imagine a place where you can be you, instead of trying to fit into a box. A place where there is joy and inner peace, positive and practical spirituality, wisdom and beauty in all spiritual paths. A place that feels like home. Spiritually progressive, always growing, building community beyond ourselves. Welcome to Journeys Fire Spiritual Center. A vibrant and diverse community that includes people of different ages, races, religious backgrounds, and sexual orientation. Journeys Fire Spiritual Center. Sunday celebration begins at 10 a.m. Come and be inspired to shine. For location and more information, our website is journeysfirespiritualcenter.org or call 317-796-1897. Journeys Fire Spiritual Center. Sharing love. Honoring all paths, celebrating life. And that's today's program. Our website is richardbrendan.com. For senior producer Lisa Morrison, engineer Joe Bainline, and production coordinator Kate Miller, I'm Richard Brendan. Join us next week as we once again go inside the music.